We have a busy morning around the building this morning. Rabbi Schuldenfrei has begun his Explorer's Minyan, which is a minyan that will happen periodically. There are notices outside, and I think in some of your sidurim, that is intended to teach people about the morning prayers so that you can be part of any service more knowledgeably and periodically. Rabbi Schuldenfrei will be conducting this Explorer's Minyan for people to understand Jewish prayer. In the family minyan, there is a bat mitzvah, and here in the main sanctuary, in a short while, Ruth Messenger, who is head of the American Jewish World Service, will be coming in to speak for a few minutes about her work across the world. She came last night to Friday Night Live, and I think people were fascinated by what she does in the name of our people and our tradition. And this morning she went first to Valley Beth Shalom in the Valley and then is on her way to Sinai Temple to speak to us. And I want to frame my remarks around this idea, what she does and what she is. If you would ask people to hold in the back, I would appreciate it. And in that way, we will be able to have some sense and background from a Jewish point of view of her expression of the covenant to the non-Jewish world. And I speak about it this way because, after all, the initial covenant in the Bible is made with whom? Noah. And is Noah a Jew? No. He built a boat, after all. So we already know. This goes back. There was an old David Brenner routine. David Brenner is a Jewish comedian. He said when growing up, his mother used to say to him, "Hammer, bad. Book, good." So he said, "I grew up my whole life hammering in nails with a book." But anyway, to get back to Noah. So Noah is not Jewish. The first covenant is made with Noah because, after all, the first covenant that a person has is with other people. Right? That's the primary covenant, is another human being in trouble makes a claim on us, even though there are priorities. Everybody knows that you owe your first obligation to your own family. You take care of your own children and make sure they're all right before you move on to other people's children. But the obligation to take care of other people is real and urgent. Having said that, I want to frame this also in terms not only of what we owe, but of who we are. As many of you know, this week, Wednesday night, I'm going to be speaking as part of this citywide exploration of Torah, which is particularly wonderful because it involves Reform, Reconstructionist, Conservative, and Orthodox rabbis. All of us together. And I'm going to give the opening talk for this, and everybody is invited, this Wednesday night. And it's going to be based on Milton Steinberg's book, As a Driven Leaf. You don't have to read the book to come, but let me just give you a word or two about what the book is and then why it's relevant to this morning's topic. I just want to check, is this mic good enough? Can you hear me in the back? Okay. Milton Steinberg wrote a book about the only rabbi whom we know who became an apostate, that is, who left Judaism. His name was Elisha ben Abuya, and he is called Acher in rabbinic literature. Acher means other. And Steinberg wrote a book about the rabbinic world, what that world was like, and also why Elisha ben Abuya left Judaism and the circle around him, because he was close with Rabbi Meir, with Rabbi Akiva, with some of the greatest names in Jewish spiritual and intellectual history. And it seems as though, even though the Talmud tells the story a couple of different ways, because it was obviously a complicated and difficult and painful subject to write about a rabbi who left Judaism, It seems as though what drove Elisha ben Abuya away was what we call the problem of evil. That is, why it is that people can observe the mitzvot and still they don't get rewarded the way the Torah seems to promise. This week, in another context, I was talking about this, because I was speaking about the covenant in Judaism. And someone got up after the lecture and said, I understand what you said about the covenant, but it seems to me the covenant is two-way. Not only are we supposed to keep it, but we're supposed to get something back. So what do you say to Jews who say, hey, you know, where is the quid pro quo? Where is the back from God in the covenant? And I answered by saying that many times as a rabbi, and I know many times in your lives as well, people come to you and they say, why did God do this to me? A tragedy befalls them and they say, Rabbi, why did God do this to me? But I want to tell you what I very rarely hear. Rarely do people come to my office and say, you know, I live in the richest country in the world. I've never faced a famine. Rabbi, why did God do this to me? I have a mind that works. I'm able to speak and read and understand. Rabbi, why did God do this to me? In other words, all of the blessings that we are showered with, we take for granted. That we're owed. And all of the bad stuff that happens to us, that we feel is undeserved. And where is our impulse to say, we have been blessed. Why did God do this to me? And if we look at the question of what we owe, in part from the perspective of who we are, it shifts very greatly. Because really, what you owe ought to be dependent in part on how blessed you are. When Ruth Messenger comes in here and starts talking, as she will a little later this morning, for example, about what she saw in Chad and the poverty and the want and the horror, we all should be saying, why did God do this to me? Why do I get to be here instead of there? And of course, the answer to that blessing is not to feel guilty. I really don't think that's productive, to say, I'm lucky, therefore I'm guilty. What is productive is to say, I'm lucky, therefore I'm responsible. I'm not allowed to just close the door and enjoy my luck without any sense of responsibility. We owe that responsibility to our own people as well as to the rest of the world. This is part of what it means to be embraced in a covenant, because it is reciprocal. But it's not only reciprocal with God, it's reciprocal with other people. If you think about it, not only in terms of the blessings of God, but the blessings of the non-Jewish world, why are we in a covenant with the non-Jewish world? This is the follow-up question. After all, what have they ever done for us? And the answer to that is also, even though we tend to single out the terrible things that have been done to the Jewish people by the non-Jewish world, and God knows, there's lots, I don't have to tell anybody sitting here, that Jews have had a tough time at the hands of the non-Jewish world. Also, are we cognizant of the blessings we have received? This may surprise you, but actually, Jews didn't build America. I know, we have Chaim Solomon. We're very proud of him. But really, around the time of the founding of America, was not really a Jewish enterprise. And yet, for all that America has not been perfect to the Jewish people, and I know the complaints, what a great blessing was given to the Jewish people, essentially by the non-Jewish world. Not only America, but most of our day-to-day lives, conveniences, things that we count on, They were given to us by the world. Most of the things we use in our daily lives were not made by Jews. I know. Every time I sit down at my computer, I'm being sent another list about Jewish Nobel Prize winners, right? So please, I have the list. I promise I have the list. And I know that really nobody who isn't Jewish or didn't have a Jewish grandfather is actually allowed to win the Nobel Prize, right? But putting that aside, granting that the Jewish contribution to the world has been disproportionate to our numbers, the rest of the world has contributed an awful lot out of which we benefit every day. And part of understanding what we owe the world is understanding that for all the complaints, all the tainas, which is the sort of Yiddishized Hebrew for complaints that we have against the world, we also ought to feel an enormous debt of gratitude. In the Talmud, one rabbi says, as a piece of bread comes to his table, thank you to all the people who made this possible. I didn't grow the wheat, I didn't thresh it, I didn't bake it, and all of a sudden, at my table, there's a piece of bread. I've never grown anything in my life. And yet, every day, I eat. I wear clothes that I didn't make. I live in a home I didn't build. In a country I didn't make. Driving a car whose manufacturer I don't even understand, much less participated in. And so when we talk about our relationship with other people, it has to be broader than our complaints. And part of the reason that we do that is because once you broaden it and you realize the tremendous platform for gratitude that anyone in our position has, then you are able also to understand how much we owe to others who don't have this good fortune, Jewish and non-Jewish. Remember, the very first thing that we are supposed to say when we get up in the morning is Modeh Ani. We are grateful to you. And we have every reason to feel grateful, even though human beings being what they are, we tend to focus on that for which we should be ungrateful. Somebody can be wearing a beautiful dress and your eye immediately goes to the spot on the shoulder. That's the way we're built. But we have to overcome that in our moral attitudes to realize that, in fact, we are phenomenally blessed. And that we owe, as a result, other people some of the largesse, some of the goods that we have been given in such profusion. And so, when people come and report, as Ruth will this morning, about what it is that other human beings endure, it's very Jewish to feel that it makes a claim on us. It should make a claim on us. When we see Israel sending help, engineers, food, money to other countries, we should feel good about that. Because that's what every human being ought to do, and certainly what Judaism teaches us to do. Remember, we are reading about Avraham. And next week, Avraham is going to try to save the city of Sodom. And there isn't a Jew in the city. It's questionable whether Lot really falls under the category of a Jew. Doesn't act very Jewish. But there's not a Jew in the city, and yet Avraham is willing to argue with God to save that city. Why? Because Abraham knows what it is to have a covenant. And he realizes that a covenant isn't only for people you feel comfortable with, for people you agree with, or for people that you live with. A covenant embraces all of humanity. And that's why, when we emphasize, as we do, over and over again, our obligations to the world, our emphasis is proportional to how much we have been given, to how much, in the end, the world has given us. Just look around you. As we are showered with blessings, we should give blessing. And so I hope this morning when we have the privilege of listening to Ruth Messenger, that you will feel that she is speaking to you, and that what she is saying is crucial, not just to the few people who are actively involved in American Jewish World Watch, in the opposition to the slaughter in Darfur, Sudan, but to all of us who have this God-given mandate, L'taken olam b'malchut Shaddai, to help and repair God's world under God's kingdom, and to make God's world a little kinder, a little better, a little more reciprocal, a little more covenantal. Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom.